Good morning. We have a lot of visitors with us this morning, and for your presence, we're very thankful and are happy you're with us. We're going to be studying this morning in Acts, the 12th chapter. As a way of getting to the 12th chapter, I'd like to do maybe a 60-second review of some of the things that we've studied in the past and have a great appreciation for these recent classes that Doug's presented. They've just been very helpful to me. As a very high-level overview, in Acts, the first and second chapter, we saw Christ's work on earth was done, and Peter preached the first gospel sermon, and 3,000 people responded. In the third through the fifth chapters, we studied the healing of the lame man and Peter's second sermon, and saw that Peter and John were arrested and the apostles were arrested, and we saw some results of what happens when you sell property and you don't tell the truth. In chapter 6, we saw how the Grecian widows received assistance. Stephen was arrested and presents a sermon and then is stoned by the Jews as Saul consented. In the 8th through the 10th chapters, we read of Philip preaching in Samaria, the conversion of the Ethiopian eunuch, the conversion of Saul, Peter's work, and the conversion of Cornelius. In chapter 11, Peter reported in Jerusalem about the conversion of the Gentile Cornelius. Also, we read that Barnabas and Saul went to Antioch of Syria. As we move into the 12th chapter, we're going to see persecution in the church by civil government, represented by Herod. And we're going to study about Herod Agrippa I's actions against James, Peter, and the early church, as well as Herod's death. So, going into the 12th chapter, the first couple of verses, I think we're going to see in the 12th chapter the importance and power of prayer also. Verses 1 and 2 read, "Now about that time Herod the king laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them. And he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword." Verse 1 says, "Now about that time." I think that refers to the end of the 11th chapter, where it speaks of either the predicted famine of when Paul and Barnabas, or when Paul and Barnabas ask about the Christians in Antioch when they determined to send help to the Christians in Judea because of the famine. Rough time frame is it's about 43, 44 A.D. It's been about 8 years since the death of Stephen, maybe 15 years since Pentecost. Verse 1 begins by saying Herod Agrippa mistreated members of the church. Herod Agrippa, by heritage, was of Idumean birth. His grandmother had that type background. That means he was a descendant of Edomites and therefore of Esau. Many of the writers consider him a Jew by practice. That can be argued. He was the grandson of Herod the Great, and he ruled over Palestine for several years, beginning in roughly 42 A.D. In 44 A.D., he died at the hand of an angel of the Lord. This man is not the Agrippa then, before whom Paul appeared later in the book of Acts. To briefly show you some of these relationships in the Herodian family to Christ and his followers, Herod the Great, who was an Edomite, sought to kill the infant Jesus, and his wife was Aunt Mariamne, granddaughter of someone that had Edomite blood, and the Asmoneans there were descendants of Esau. Herod Archelaus ruled when Jesus, Mary, and Joseph returned from Egypt. Herod Antipas beheaded John the Baptist. Herod Philip was the half-brother of Antipas. Herodias was the wife of Philip, who also married Antipas. Salome was the daughter of Herodias. Herod Agrippa I persecuted the church and beheaded James, brother of John, and his grandmother was Mariamne, the granddaughter of Hyrcanus, who was an Asmonean. And then we get to Herod Agrippa II, who was the man before whom the Apostle Paul appeared in Acts 26. So today we're looking at Herod Agrippa I. My point in going through this quickly is very simple. The family was heavily involved in the life and activities of Christ in the early church. Also, considering this chart, is it any surprise to you that in Acts the 26th chapter, when Paul appeared before King Agrippa II, that he said that he would happily answer before Agrippa, touching all things whereof I am accused of the Jews, especially because I know thee to be expert in all customs and questions which are among the Jews. Basically, truly, the lives and fortunes of the Herods collided with the lives of Jesus and his followers again and again. Now in Acts 12, Herod Agrippa I is the man Luke is writing about. He appears only here in Acts the 12th chapter, as far as the New Testament goes. Josephus says, and Josephus was an early historian, that after Herod Agrippa I was confirmed as an independent sovereign by Emperor Claudius, he went to Judea and worked to gain the favor of the Jews. Now, wonder how he might try to gain favor of the Jews. So go back to verse 1. It says, Herod laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them. Now, who the some are who belong to the church, refers to exactly and how many they were that were arrested, I don't know. We read this same expression, laid hands on, in Acts 4:3 and 5th chapter, verse 18, to say that they were arrested and roughly handled. And here it says, James, the brother of John, was put to death with the sword. And I guess, are we surprised that Herod takes such a violent action to persecute a member of the church and someone as prominent as James? And I don't know that seeing the early church persecuted which would have been a big surprise to some of these men. John 15th chapter verse 20, Jesus said, "Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also." And Mark the 10th chapter verse 37-39 has some thoughts there as well about the subject of persecution. So as we look at this, it says in that second verse, and he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. With just a very few words. You know, we would like more details probably. But Luke just states, matter of fact, he put James, the brother of John, to death with the sword. Luke provides an example of Herod's evil actions against the church. We learn that James, the brother of John, was James, the son of the Zebedee, and one of the 12 original apostles. James is the only one of the 12 whose death is recorded in the New Testament. While other than the thought of verse 3, which says Herod's actions, which we'll see in just a moment, pleased the Jews, we're not told why James was singled out by Herod Agrippa. Perhaps it was because he was being effective in what he was doing and showing in instructing about Christ, preaching Christ. But, you know, in a very real way, the death of James showed the early Christians, as well as us today, that we are to participate in the sufferings of Christ. Verse 3, when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. Now it was during the days of unleavened bread. When he had seized him, he put him in prison, delivered him to 4 squads of soldiers to guard him, intending after the Passover to bring him out before the people. So, as you see that first phrase in verse 3, That goes back to those first two verses and influences me to think that's one of the motives Herod had being revealed for some of his actions, including the death of James. He saw that his execution of James pleased the Jews, and there were many Jews in Jerusalem at the time, because it's during the days of unleavened bread, and the days of unleavened bread referred to that week-long feast of unleavened bread that followed the feast of Passover. Perhaps Herod thought that if executing James pleased the Jews, he could go even further. Before I go any further, any comments to that point? So he wants to go further. He says to himself, if killing James pleased the Jews, how about arresting Peter? Would that please them even more? So Peter is arrested. Earlier, I said that Herod had some Jewish blood way on downstream in his lineage. Perhaps he realizes, since his family has touched the growth of the church here and there, that there were three apostles who were closer to Jesus, Peter, James, and John. Perhaps he saw that pleasing the Jews who were upset with the Christians is something he could do as a ruler to gain favor with the Jews while not angering the government in Rome. Maybe it was just political expediency, perhaps like Felix displayed in Acts 24:27, where he left Paul bound to please the Jews. I don't know. But he wanted to please the Jews, and his motivation for why he wanted to please them, maybe he wanted to gain favor among while he was going to be in their area ruling. In verse 4, when he had seized him, he put him in prison. Four squads of soldiers are going to guard Peter. And then he's going to bring him out in front of the people after Passover is over. Peter is an important prisoner. As one of the original 12 apostles, he's a leader in the church. Remembering Acts 5:19 tells us of one time when in prison, Peter was able to escape. Verse 4 says that now he's heavily guarded and will be heavily guarded until after Passover. Then Herod Agrippa intends to bring him out in front of the people. And I think, it's an expression indicating that Peter might be killed as well. To show you how securely Peter is guarded, he says four squads of soldiers. That's typically 16 men are assigned to guard Peter around the clock. Now that sounds like a lot of soldiers to guard one person. But several of the writers say that these men would have been relieved ever so often throughout the day. In addition, out of a squad of four, as we look at verse 6, it indicates that Peter was between two soldiers, and there were two soldiers that would have been outside the location of where Peter was. And it seems likely Peter was bound to each of these soldiers since he was in the middle between them. And he had chains, bound with two chains. And when you look at that, and you look at verse 10, out of that group of four, two of the soldiers are bound to Peter, and then you've got two more soldiers, and it says in verse 10 that he's going to pass a first guard, and then a second guard, and then reach an iron gate. So possibly they're on down the path through the prison where he is, so that if he gets by one, there's still another one. But it takes four at a time to keep him under guard. And I still find it a little bit dismaying that they think it takes four men to guard one person. But It's not the first time Peter's been in jail. In Acts 4, Peter and John were held overnight and appeared before the Sanhedrin. In Acts 5, 17 to 42, Peter and the other apostles were imprisoned. And verse 18 says they were in common prison. Verse 22 says when they went to look for the apostles, they were not in the prison, because verse 19 says an angel released them. So maybe all the past experience with the apostles has given Herod some indication that extra effort needs to be made to keep up with this man, unless he's going to escape or be outside the prison preaching Christ again, like has happened in some of the prior imprisonments. Any comments through verse 4? In verse 5, so Peter was kept in prison, but prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God. While Peter remained in prison, his fellow Christians prayed for him without ceasing. That's the King James comment. As we'll see in verse 12, they gathered together and prayed. Now, this takes effort and organization to maintain continual prayers and assembly of the brethren together. But, you know, these Christians did not allow persecution to affect their faith or their belief in the power of prayer, and they prayed continually for Peter. This went on for several days, verse 3 makes us think, since verse 3 refers to Peter being arrested during the days of unleavened bread, and verse 6 refers to the night before Herod was to bring Peter out before the people, which would have been after this feast period was over. Regardless of how difficult the situation appears, the Christians prayed for Peter. You're very familiar from this pulpit with James 5:16, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. So on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and guards in front of the door were watching over the prison. Robert Burns once wrote, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry." Things don't always work out the way man plans, especially when God is not included in man's plans. So this tells the story for Herod. Let's not forget the words of verse 4 where we learn Herod Agrippa intended to bring Peter out of the prison after Pentecost and likely kill him. Verse 6 tells us that on the very night before Herod was about to act, Peter was asleep between two soldiers and bound by chains. As I said earlier, I think likely a one chain tied to each soldier. Guards are even stationed further outside the room. And there are four squads that are rotating service in keeping up with Peter. That way all of them should be well awake, not asleep. They've had their rest, so four squads are keeping up with him, with an expectation of being dealt with by Herod the next day, perhaps even killed. What does it say Peter's doing? He's sleeping. He's sleeping. Would we have? Peter truly placed his trust in God. Peter understood Christ's instruction in Matthew 6, 25, 34, where the futility of worry is mentioned. Man cannot, through worry, add one cubit unto his stature. Psalm 4, 8 says, "I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety." Instead, we should seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Peter did this. He was at peace. My prayer for each of us is that we each can lay our heads down each night and sleep peacefully as Peter did in difficult circumstances. In verse 7, "And behold, an angel of the Lord appeared and a light shone in the cell. And he struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, 'Get up quickly.' And his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, 'Gird yourself and put on your sandals.' And he did so. And he said to him, 'Wrap your cloak around you and follow me.' Now, despite what Herod Agrippa planned, God had other plans. An angel appeared to Peter, had a hard time maybe waking Peter since the angel brought light to the cell and had to punch Peter in the side. One writer says, light and splendor and shining apparel are commonly represented as the accompaniments of heavenly beings when they visit earth. The angel tells him to get up quickly. As this happened, a miracle occurs. The chains that bound both of Peter's hands fell off. In verse 8, the angel told Peter to get dressed and follow him. The angel is wanting Peter to move quickly. And the angel's instructions are as if Peter was drowsy and has to be told what to do. So we get to 9 and 10, and he went out and continued to follow. And he did not know that what was being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. When they had passed the first and second guard, they came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened for them by itself. And they went out and went along one street, and immediately the angel departed from him. Peter now realizes that this has not been a vision. He wasn't dreaming. It actually happened. Instead of a dream, he's been miraculously delivered from prison, and Herod's plan to win favor among the Jews, likely by killing him, is not going to come about. Instead of death or harsh treatment at the minimum, he's been delivered by an angel of the Lord and's free. The angel had prevented the expectations of Herod and the Jewish people from being realized. And again, in both the case back in Acts, the 5th chapter, verse 19, and here, Peter was expecting some pretty harsh treatment. The King James uses the word considered instead of realized. I've gone too far in my notes. Let me stop there and see if any of you have a comment through verse 9. In verses 9 and 10, Peter is followed by the angel. He thought he might have been having a vision. He realizes that he wasn't having a vision, and the guards don't react, which is a blessing. It's miraculous. He's led through the gates. He passes out through this area. So an angel has appeared, a light's been shining, chains have fallen off. Peter was chained and didn't wake up. The angel had to rouse him. He thought it was a vision. It wasn't. They passed a guard. They passed a second guard. Outer gate automatically opens. Prayers that had been being prayed for Peter's release were being answered. So we get to verse 11 and 12, but let me stop. Any comments? Packs. Very good point. You know, amidst difficulties, the faith of Christians often grows. We have brethren right today who are being forbidden to assemble in northern Italy because of the illness that's going through. But they're taking some special effort to maintain contact with one another and to at least do some teaching through the computer by trying to broadcast some lessons, because assembling in a congregation, and the schools have been closed, the churches are closed, you know, there's no assembly. But they're still working to learn and grow. In verse 11, when Peter came to himself, he said, "Now I know for sure that the Lord has sent forth his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting." And when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many were gathered together and were praying. Again, Peter realizes it's not been a vision. He's not been dreaming. It happened. He's been miraculously delivered from prison. Herod's plans have been foiled. The Jews aren't going to have their heyday with his life at this moment. Instead of death, he's been delivered by an angel. Instead of harsh punishment, if not death, he's been delivered by an angel of the Lord. He's free. As you look at this 12th verse, and when he realized this, the King James uses the word considered. That suggests that he gave some thought to what was going on. He had to kind of get his mind together. I don't know about any of you, except Linda. When I get up in the morning, especially since I've retired, there are some days I wonder what day of the week it is and what I've got to do. And I find that disconcerting. That's never happened before. But maybe with all these type events going on, Peter had to kind of stand up, think, what has just happened? What do I need to do next? And upon realizing his rescue was because the Lord had rescued him, Peter, verse 12 tells us that Peter went where he knew he could find friends. Peter went where he could find help. He went to the house of Mary, a relative of Barnabas, Colossians 4:10 says sister, I think, and the mother of John Mark, who Peter calls his son, in 1 Peter 5:13. He goes to get help. It's not a sin to take care of yourself. That's what Peter's doing. God does his part, but he expects us to do our part in caring for ourselves as well. And several people were there where he was going and doing the very thing mentioned back in verse 5. They were praying in spite of all the persecution. The church continued to meet and pray. What does that tell us today? First, I think it says they believed in the power of prayer. Secondly, we need to pray, and we need to pray for each other. And I think this is a congregation that does. Any comments through 12? Freddie.
You know, you read a case like this that happened to those people in the New Testament. And I always remember a statement made by Brother Ward Hogan when he said, you know, I've not so much as even been slapped for the cause of Christ. And we as Christians sometimes think we've got it hard.
Very true. Verse 13 and following. When he knocked at the door of the gate, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer. When she recognized Peter's voice because of her joy, she did not open the gate but ran in and announced that Peter was standing in front of the gate. They said to her, "You're out of your mind." But she kept insisting that it was so. They kept saying, "It's an angel." Peter knocked and wanted to enter. Because Peter had been arrested, likely a knock on the door late at night might cause concern that Roman soldiers might be at the gate wanting to arrest someone else. Rhoda, the servant girl, perhaps a very young woman, recognized Peter's voice, which tells us he was known by the household. He'd been there before, been around these people. She was shocked and very happy. The verse says, out of gladness, because of her joy, King James Version, she forgot to let him enter. Maybe Peter was saying, "Let me in before the guards come." Regardless, she was shocked. Whatever he said, the girl recognized it was Peter, and in her excitement and happiness, she ran to tell others. She forgot to let him in. When she told everyone who was at the gate, they didn't believe her. Maybe they didn't believe her because she was young. You know, that's a tendency on we who are older to not always believe those who are younger sometimes. When she kept insisting, they said it must be an angel. Well, the Jews did believe in guardian angels, and they thought that Peter's angel had appeared maybe in a human form and was speaking in Peter's voice. Now look at verse 16. But Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. But motioning to them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had led him out of the prison. And he said, "Report these things to James and the brethren." Then he left and went to another place. Maybe Peter is hoping the guards don't find him and take him back to jail before someone opens the door. Finally, they open the door and are amazed that Peter is there. Likely, they're so happy and make so much noise, Peter uses his hands to motion them to be quiet. What kind of noise? Just listen at this congregation between services or before service or after service. You know, when we're together, there is noise. These people are meeting. They're praying for Peter when they're together. Now this Rhoda's gone in and told them that Peter is at the gate. And there's going to be a commotion. So Peter uses his hand and signals for quietness. He tells them what happened. And he tells them to tell James and the brethren. And this James is likely the one referred to by Paul in Galatians 1:19 as the Lord's brother. Peter then left. Where he went, we don't know. As to the reason he left, we can only speculate. Perhaps Mary's house is well known as a meeting place for Christians. Perhaps Peter does not want to do anything to cause harm to those at Mary's house if he is found there. So he leaves. In verse 18, now when day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards and ordered that they be led away to execution. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and was spending time there. An uproar occurs the next morning. Everyone's trying to find Peter. The soldiers are looking everywhere. Remember how secured Peter was? So he was guarded by 16 soldiers taking shifts around the clock. Bound between two soldiers by chains. Other soldiers stationed outside the location where Peter is bound. And there were gates to get through before he could be gone. An iron gate to leave the prison and go into the city. When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, if Herod had been receptive to the gospel's message, perhaps he would have realized a miracle had occurred. Instead, he did not give God the glory for a miracle occurring. He treated the events as daily activities under his, Herod's, control. So verse 19 says, Herod personally interrogated the guards before having them executed, which is the penalty under Roman law for letting a prisoner escape. Herod Agrippa then left town. Let me go one slide. He left town going from Judea north to Caesarea. Any comments through verse 19? Sir. Yes, he, in verse 23, we're going to see he had a very high opinion of himself. In verse 20, now he was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon. And with one accord they came to him. And having won over Blastus, the king's chamberlain, they were asking for peace because their country was fed by the king's country. On an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took his seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to him. The people kept crying out, "The voice of a god and not of a man." And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died. Now he was very angry, it tells us, with the people of Tyre and Sidon, which is an area located to the north. On the map there, you can see Tyre and Sidon at the top part of that little map. The original Greek word for angry means to fight with great animosity, to wage war fiercely, to be warmly hostile, be enraged against. Now, those are pretty strong feelings. I hope none of you feel that way toward me. While the cause of the problem is not explained, the cities apparently realize the seriousness of the situation. In verses 21 and 22, Herod dresses up in his fine clothing, takes his seat, and begins to speak. One writer believes that Josephus, the historian, identifies the place of this as the theater at Caesarea. We don't know this for sure, though. But the people began shouting that he was something he was not. They were trying to flatter him. And in verse 20, one of the reasons they wanted to flatter him was their country was fed by the king's country. So as we look at verse 23, an angel of the Lord struck Herod Agrippa. The reason this happened is explained as Herod did not give God the glory. I've referred to Josephus, the historian, again because he has an account that says Herod put on a garment made wholly of silver which reflected the sun's rays and did neither rebuke them nor reject their disrespectful attitude toward God, treating it as flattery. In other words, Herod took these comments, the voice of a god, not of a man, as his just due. He thought it was fine to be called this. Peter was humble, knew his place. Herod Agrippa did not. We'll close with Isaiah. Isaiah 42, God said, "I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images." Verse 23 of chapter 40, "He it is who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless." As a result, verse 23 says God sent an angel to strike Herod specifically because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died. And historians have indicated this was about A.D. 44, and he might have lived 5 days before he died in severe pain. We'll begin here in the 12th chapter on Wednesday night. Thank you.